time to thrive. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast with Dr. Lee Bockham. Join us as we explore ways that you can thrive in your life, regardless of what life throws at you. It's your life. Time to live it.
Hi, this is Lee Bockham. And before I continue into the Thriveology Podcast, my legal staff tells me that I need to read the statement. What I'm about to say should not be construed as medical advice. Before making any changes, you should consult your doctor. This material is my opinion. Based in research and experience, it may or may not apply to you. You need to assess my statements. Do not accept what I say as fact. Research what I say. This is the Thriveology Podcast, and this is the podcast designed to help you have a thriving life no matter what life throws your way. Right now, we're in the middle of a series on dealing with depression. And the reason that we're talking about this is because one of the huge places where people lose their capacity of feeling like they can thrive is when they feel depressed. Now, I want to say very clearly that I do not believe that thriving is about being happy all the time. In fact, I've spent a lot of time talking about why I don't think happiness is really the goal of life, that sometimes that's a piece of life, but that the real experience of life is much deeper than that. That said, I also recognize that many people lose lots of their life, lots of their energy and capacity of enjoying life from depression. And now, last week, I talked some about some myths and truths about depression, and evidently, I hit some nerves because I got some emails, and so I wanted to answer those emails just so that everybody gets that, the answers. One of the emails I got was basically an accusation. It said, "So, you don't believe in depression? I can tell you that depression exists. I've had it for years." So I got about three letters that all basically said that, if I boil it down. Let me say very clearly, I do believe that depression exists. I absolutely believe that depression exists. And in fact, I hope I made that very clear last week. What I'm concerned about in the myths of depression is how we sometimes confuse it with other things. And more than that, I'm really concerned about the treatment methods in our country, that we have gotten to the place where we have so pharmaceuticalized everything that we think that the way out of anything is a pill. And unfortunately, that has not worked for depression. While it is great if it's an antibiotic and you've got an infection, it's not so useful when you have depression and you take a pill. Okay, so some other letters that came in. One says, "So you think it's all in my head? So you're blaming me?" I actually do think a lot of depression happens actually in two places. In your head, meaning your brain, and in your gut, meaning your digestive tract. And I'm going to talk some more about that as we talk through this. But this is not about me thinking it's all in anybody's head or it's anybody's fault. But notice that the thoughts that you're having are where you often notice that depression. Right? That a lot of what happens in depression is about the thoughts. And so it is happening in the mind. It's happening wherever you place that piece of you, whether it's in your head or in your heart or in your stomach or in your body. That thought process is what we're looking at. And it's the down thoughts, the low energy thoughts that tend to rob people of life. It's not that depressed people are having thoughts about how great life is and how wonderful things are. It's that the thoughts around depression, the thoughts that are created by this multi-level piece that we call depression, that robs us of energy and of hope and of worth and all these other pieces that create much more of a thriving life. And so I absolutely do not believe it's all in your head, meaning I think that there's something wrong just in your thinking. Nor do I mean to blame you. In fact, I would say that what I'm trying to do is say there's something that can be done. That no matter what has caused the depression, no matter the origins, there are things that can happen that can be done. And so it's not about blame. It's one of those terms that I use quite often about responsibility. Are you able to respond to what's happening in your life in ways that take you to a much more thriving place? Now, let me be very clear that I recognize if you are being pulled or you have a loved one who's being pulled by the throes of depression, that it's very hard to find the energy to do the things that I'm going to suggest. But I also know that taking a pill doesn't do it either. And so we need to find some place of saying, what can be done? Is this something that I can just kind of muster the energy and find some ways of moving forward with some things that might actually help me. And so then I got some letters by people who say, wait, you tell me that antidepressants don't work. Well, I'm here to tell you my antidepressants do work. So let me clarify. Antidepressants show themselves to be only slightly better than placebos. It's not that they don't work. Sugar pills work. It's not that they don't work. It's just the effectiveness of them is far below what we assume it is. If you look at the ads on television or in the magazines or you listen to the doctors, you would get the impression that you take a pill and your depression will lift. That is simply not the case. And so the problem is that some people find themselves on this hamster wheel, the rat wheel, running round and round and round, trying to get to something and getting nowhere very quickly. And because of the efficacy of many psychotherapeutic medications, meaning the ones that help your psychological issues, we look at a 3-month span. So we're waiting for 3 months for a medicine to help. So I remember years ago when I was seeing a client, and this one client kept having to change antidepressants because they wouldn't work. And it took us a year to only test out 5 medications, only to find that none of the 5 worked. Well, we did some other things that were actually much more effective, but those medications, it took us a year to determine that there were 5 pills that don't work. And so it's not that antidepressants do not work at all. It's the fact that the way we test the efficacy of something in this country on whether it can be advertised as an effective medication is simply this. Does it beat the placebo, or at least does it come even to the placebo? If it comes, it works as well as placebo or better, you can call it a drug. If it works worse, it's not going to make it to the market. If it causes too many side effects, even while it's more effective, then again, it might not make it. But what the drug companies are looking for is something that will at least meet, if not exceed, a placebo, meaning a sugar pill, and does not create so many side effects that it's going to be more damaging than not. Now, that there's some subjectivity in that, and there are some ways that those tests end up being a little bit subjectively created by the drug companies. And so I'm not saying that antidepressants do not work. I'm just saying that they don't work as well as we've been led to believe, first of all. Second, that they do have lots of side effects. And third, that a sugar pill often will do just as good. And see, here's the thing. The placebo effect is a powerful effect. It's been tested time and again, and it's been proven that even if somebody knows they're taking a sugar pill, it will help them. And so it's not that antidepressants are ineffective. It's that they are not much more effective when you look at the statistical studies than taking a sugar pill, than taking a placebo. Now, if you want to check back to last week's podcast in the show notes, I actually have a couple of links to articles that point to why that's the case. And you want to recognize that one of the reasons that we don't have excellent tests is because of the selectivity of who's going to be included. The people who are included in the drug test for antidepressants, for the effectiveness level, is those who have low levels of depression. Once they hit moderate to severe, they don't want them in the test. They exclude them from the test. So they're looking for low levels. Well, here's the little trick. Low-level depression often resolves by itself in 3 months. Okay, so if you have found an antidepressant that works for you, that's great. I'm not suggesting that anybody stop taking their medication. I'm just suggesting that we have been led to believe that this is a medical issue when we can't prove that at all, and we can't prove that there's a medication that's going to help. Okay, then I got a few more emails, and those emails were actually the majority of them that said something like this, thank you. One person said, I had 8 medications that did not work, and it felt like this was being blamed on me. Nothing seemed to make a difference, and I was feeling blamed. That was one person. Another person said, thank you so much. I've been on antidepressants hoping for some relief and suffering through the side effects, not sure why I wasn't getting better. So interestingly, some people felt blamed when their medication didn't work, and others felt blamed when they heard me say, it's all in your head. And I don't want you to ever believe that I think it's all in your head. I think it's much more complex. I think depression is much more complex than we understand it, that it is a much more complex issue, and yet there are some ways that we can deal with it. So let's just step back a minute, because somebody said, so what is it you mean by depression? This is where we get into an interesting place. What is depression? Well, as opposed to other medical conditions where somebody can point to the infection, either by the effects on the body or by the fact that you can actually look on a petri dish and see the infection growing when it's cultured, and as opposed to like a broken bone where you can actually see the fracture, or cancer where you can see the tumor, this is not the same with depression. In fact, it's not even the same when we do scans of the brain. You know, now we have these nice scans, that the fMRIs that have the brain in movement, kind of as the brain's working. And we can see when we put people into that fMRI with either schizophrenia or bipolar or a certain number of other mental illnesses, and it will show how the brain is misfunctioning, as opposed to depression, which only shows that there's a part of the brain that's a little more hyperactive. Well, that part of the brain is the part of the brain that's always looking for threat anyway. It's the fear part of the brain. So it's no surprise that that would be overly active when people are having kind of depressive thoughts. We can't point to another place in the brain and say, see, that's where it's broken. And so we've come up with some guidelines. And here are the guidelines that are used to diagnose. To have some or all of these symptoms: persistent, sad, anxious, or empty mood. So it's a persistent, meaning it's not just for a moment, but it's a sad, anxious, or empty, and that's in quotes, mood. Or feelings of hopelessness and pessimism. Or feelings of guilt, worthlessness, or helplessness. Or loss of interest or pleasure in hobbies and activities. Or decreased energy, fatigue, or being slowed down. Or difficulty concentrating, remembering, or making decisions. Or difficulty sleeping, early morning awakening, or oversleeping. So too much sleep, not enough sleep, waking up too early, those kinds of things. Appetite and or weight changes, meaning you gain weight or lose weight, you lose your appetite, you have too much of an appetite, either can be symptoms. Thoughts of death or suicide, or even suicide attempts, or especially suicide attempts. Or restlessness and irritability. Or persistent physical symptoms. So we're looking for a certain number of those. Now, I want you to just pause and ask yourself, have you ever had any of those symptoms, even if you consider yourself not to be depressed? There are times when I feel kind of hopeless and pessimistic. There are times when I feel some helplessness and some worthlessness. Sometimes I just don't feel like doing something I usually love doing. Sometimes my energy is really low. I have difficulty concentrating. Sometimes I have difficulty sleeping, right? We all have pieces of this. And that's what makes this tricky. It's a very subjective decision to say, is this depression or is this just kind of common, ordinary days of life kind of thoughts? That's what makes it so difficult to say, what is this depression? So as much as psychiatrists and therapists would like to say, oh, it's very clear cut, it is not at all clear cut. It's a very subjective decision. It's semi-scientific also. We're looking for a grouping of symptoms, but you don't have to have all the symptoms. You have to have some of the symptoms. And if you have all the symptoms, that's much more clear-cut. But if you have just a few, at what point do you say, oh, that's depression? That's why when we're talking about depression, it gets to be a fairly subjective piece to say what really constitutes clinical depression. I've heard some people make this argument that there's a difference between clinical depression and everyday depression. But if you look at those symptoms, it would only be in the number that somebody has. Now, here's my belief about depression. I believe that those symptoms are about depression. They point to somebody who has gotten into a depressed state. I'm just not as clear in my thinking about that there is a place where we go from kind of the clinical, and that's outside of the ordinary. I think it's only in degrees. It's how much and how long and how persistent and how stuck somebody is in that. I do believe that depression is systemic, that it really does affect more than your thoughts. It certainly affects your thoughts. You can see that very easily. When somebody's having those hopeless, helpless thoughts, the feelings of worthlessness and that nothing's going to work out, and maybe even thoughts of wanting to hurt themselves or at least escape life, those are all very clearly our thoughts. But it also affects our moods. You know, that's that irritability level or just the frustration level or just the kind of the flat. We call it a flat affect in clinical observations. Flat affect meaning that somebody just is kind of devoid of emotions and that they're just kind of flat-lined at a low point. So it affects our mood. Also energy. that somebody might not have the energy to go do what they normally want to do and just kind of want to hide, just kind of get away from everything and avoid everything. And here's the other piece. It can hurt, that there can be aches and pains in the body that are all about the fact that the body has gotten into an overall systemic depression, and that's what's affecting it. Let me also say something else about depression. It is neither, in my opinion, neither clearly medical nor clearly moral. And those are usually it's kind of made as either or. Either this is some medical problem, some shortfalling in the biochemistry of the body, or it's a moral problem that somebody's just not thinking good thoughts. I don't think it's clearly either. I think it has clear medical results that as you become depressed, that there really are some biological changes in the body that happen. I also believe that there is a thought piece, that it's not a moral piece, but it is how people tend to their thought process and what people do in order to kind of move in a positive direction. Now, let me also say that there are some parts that are normal about depression. I wanted to point that out as I was going through those symptoms, that it's possible to have some symptoms of depression and it not be so severe that you're going to look at that and say, wow, I am clinically depressed. There are times in our lives when we all go through that, adjustment periods in our lives, maybe empty nest or midlife crisis or after a job loss, things like that, that are just kind of points where you have to adjust to new life. Or maybe it's disappointments, you know, that somebody doesn't get into med school or law school, or somebody doesn't get in the college they want, or somebody doesn't get a promotion they want, or a relationship that you thought was going to end in marriage doesn't end in marriage, or a marriage that's going along and you're disappointed by where things are in life. And that can lead to a lot of the same symptoms that we've just talked about. Also, when there's uncertainty in life, you know, when we've just come through a fairly rocky period in our economy, and some people were faced with uncertainty. And when you're faced with uncertainty on a constant level, it's going to lead to thoughts about fears and worthlessness and helplessness that are just a natural part of that. And also, it can be related to trauma. When bad things happen, a lot of times people find that after an accident or a car wreck or an injury or some severe trauma, that those symptoms of depression are there. That's a part of the post-trauma period. I'm not talking about post-traumatic stress, but post-trauma period where people are kind of readjusting and getting used to a new life, that they often can experience some of those same symptoms of depression. So what does that mean? Well, for me, what that means is that we have to have a multi-level approach to treatment, a multi-level approach to dealing with this. Now, I've already said that I don't believe that medications are overly effective in this, that it's not particularly helpful with the pharmaceutical approach we have, but that doesn't mean there aren't some ways of dealing with this. There are some ways that are very natural and very low impact, and I'm not talking about particularly alternative health stuff, although many people find help in that. What I'm talking about are things that have been scientifically proven to change the effects. We can see this, and they are much more effective than the pharmaceutical approach without the side effects and without a lot of the other stuff. So what we want to talk about in our next episode is what you do to approach and deal with depression. How do you break the hold that depression has upon you? And that will be what we cover in the next podcast. Until then, I wish you the best as you continue to work to have a thriving life. If you've got questions, you can email me those. If you've got responses to this, you can leave them in the comments below or email me, lee@thriveology.com. I'd love to hear what you think about this. And if this has been helpful, please share. Please let people know how they can find this. It's easy to do. If you want to share this, you can find the different sharing buttons on the bottom of the post if you're on the blog. If you are on Twitter, it's real easy to do it. Show us a little Twitter love just by typing into your browser, thriveology.com/love. That's thriveology.com/love. That'll give you a pre-populated tweet, put you right there. If you want to visit us on our Facebook page and leave a comment there, you can find us at thriveology.com/Facebook. That's thriveology.com/Facebook. And do remember to share right below. This is Lee Balcom, wishing you the best for a thriving life.
been listening to the Thriveology Podcast. Thank you for listening. If you want more information, visit us at Thriveology.com or at ThriveologyMagazine.com. Remember that Thriveology is spelled T-H-R-I-V-E-O-L-O-G-Y. It's your life. Time to live it.